My name is Janet, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Janet.
I first like to say that I really didn't want to do this meeting today. And it's on service. Get that? And it's because I thought somebody else was doing the meeting, blah, blah, blah. And that's because I was in big-time disease today. That's what it really was about. But God always has another plan. And if anybody understands, you know, whoever your higher power is, if you're not with God yet, I just need to say that the topic is kind of, you know, it's a little funny for me because service. Me and I, you know what? I had to use definitely the first chance I got, and you know, I wound up on crack. I was out on the street doing anything and everything for one more. And so, you know, when I came into this fellowship, I came in 1991. I got 16 years clean. In 1991, they was telling me about this program. That means somebody was doing service. Someone was bringing in an H&I meeting in detox. And I had no idea what, you know, Narcotics Anonymous was. I had no idea what a fellowship was. I had no idea what service was. I had no idea what addiction was. I just knew that I didn't want to live no more. And some person who had a chain on, believe me, they had a chain on, and that's what I seen. You know, material things, at that point, that's the only thing I can kind of see what might be clean time, maybe if they was driving or they was clean, you know, they looked clean. But I had no idea about this person had a real life, and they was just coming. I thought they was getting paid to come. And this guy would come to detox and share his story. And I couldn't believe that he used to shoot dope. I couldn't believe none of that. And so, you know, the first chance I got when I did get some clean time, I definitely got into H&I. Because H&I, you know, treatment centers could be, you could be in a good treatment center or you can be in a bad treatment center. Or you don't have to go to a treatment center. But, you know, what introduced me to Narcotics Anonymous was H&I. People bringing the meetings in, treatment and in detox. And that's where I had learned about this program. And this program is what saved my life, not the treatment center. This program and God. And so I know I can't keep it unless I give it away. And even in the 12th step, it talks about, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to practice spirit. It says in the first paragraph, we are here as a result of the wreckage of our past. And you know what? Without that, I wouldn't be where I am. I came in here, I couldn't even put a sentence together. I had no education. Matter of fact, I ain't have on no drawers. So, yeah, I have to say that. I mean, I was just like skinny. I didn't have anything. And, you know, I had four children by this time, by four different fathers, and I just couldn't stand myself. And so when I got in here, I got busy. You know, and they told, you know what really works is the footwork. It's not what we say in the rooms and the footwork. Helping another addict, coming to a meeting and working the steps. And in order to carry the message, they say a person with one day, because I read it again, just a refresher. A person with one day clean can actually carry a message of recovery. You know, anybody can carry a message, but, you know, everybody carries in different ways. Like people that are in service, like I am, I'm a service junkie. I was a chair of my convention in Miami, and I was this and I was that. I was crazy as the rest of the whole people on the committee. Crazy as a motherfucker. We were all crazy. And most service junkies are, you know. But at home, and that's when, you know, the topic, I'm going to try to get to there. At home, the first like 5 or 6 years, I did like 12 meetings a week. Because I have four children by four different fathers who weren't in their life. I didn't know how to be a mother. Addiction runs in my family. Need I say more? I didn't want to be home. But, you know, but thank God for the program because then it allowed me to get a foundation. Then I started learning about traditions. How to deal with it teaches you how to deal with the group and unity and all that. But it also teaches you how to practice concepts and the principles in your own home. After 5 years, 6 years, I started realizing that I was really neglecting my home. And that, yeah, I was, you know, the chair, this is secretary, this is treasurer, that, and da-da-da-da-da. But at home, I wasn't mom. And so then I started to, you know, stay home more and try to spend more time with my children. It was kind of difficult because, you know, a lot of times mothers would like to say, oh, I'm just a mom and I'm just great. I sucked as a parent for many years because I had all my children for the wrong reasons. But, you know, again, principles always kick in, you know. I had most of my kids in my addiction. And when you work the steps and you start really applying these principles, things happen to you. You know, you do the right things for all the right reasons. You know, and you know what? The only thing that I'm really going to leave behind, because, you know, we live to die. And as long as I die clean, that's a good thing. But the only thing that I'm going to leave behind is none of the material things on the job or anything else that I'm going to obtain, that I have obtained and that I'm going to obtain in the future, is my children. And how am I really going to practice, you know, help the suffering addict, which was me sometime, and, you know, people with time and newcomers, if I'm not helping my own children who may become addicts? If I can't do it at home, if I can't do it, my cousins, I'm talking about everybody in my family suffers from this disease, okay? So why, you know, I needed to be able to, you know, I can help a newcomer. Matter of fact, I did better with helping a stranger because it was too much feelings connected with family members, you know? I mean, to be honest with you, I really couldn't deal. A lot of fear, a lot of unresolved issues with my children's father and with my children that I had to go a little deeper. So actually, the second time I was working the steps, the second time when I was about 5 or 6 years clean, and I started to do some work in the home and stay home and have like a house meeting. I'm serious. I used some of the principles that's in this fellowship in my house. And that's the only way I knew how to. And even on my job, to be honest with you, when I have meetings on my job, I use the same principles I use in the business meetings because that's the only thing I knew. See, when I got here, I didn't know how to live, okay? I don't know about you. I didn't know how to do anything but use. I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to love. And love is a principle, by the way. I didn't know how to apply principles. The only thing I knew how to do was be angry. And that's what I used to fuel that anger, you know what I'm saying? It was like a high, just get mad, you know? I was angry because my mother shot dope. I was angry because my father wasn't there. I was angry because of this. I was you know, excuses. Blaming. But, you know, when we come here, we learn how to, you know, be responsible for our own actions and practice the principles in all our affairs. And, you know, carrying the message sometimes is not just to the addict, you know, that it is to the addict who still suffers, but sometimes the addict who still suffers might be your family member, and it might be, you know, they might not be addicts yet, but, you know, they have issues too, you know. So service and practicing these principles in all our affairs, for me, really had to start with me, and then really applying the principles in my home. My daughter, my little daughter, she's 19 now. I have a 26-year-old daughter, 43 now, 26, 23, 19, and 18. And when they were going through their adolescence, I wasn't going to use drugs, but I was going to put a gun to my head. I wanted to, but I didn't. I was too happy to be clean. So I'm just literally trying to let you know where I was. I was very angry. I was very unhappy because it was so unmanageable in my house. So I started having meetings, like I was saying earlier, and trying to get everybody to talk. In the first like year, we were just screaming at each other. And I'm supposed to be a social worker, by the way. Because, you know, I went to school and fixed everything to try to fix this and da-da-da-da-da. Sick, sick, sick. I'm going to fix the world. Look. Yeah, right. But, you know, we started having meetings in the house, and they started just throwing things at me. And this is what I was afraid of. You weren't there even when you got clean. You was in meetings and shit. You love the people in the fellowship more than you love us. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm defensive, of course. But then I started to hear it and realize, well, I'm here now. What could I do, you know? And then, you know, as soon as I started owning up to my own stuff, even though, you know, it was playing hooky, the house was dirty sometime, and that was my biggest thing because I'm a clean freak. This and that, I was trying to, you know, teaching them how to keep the focus on themselves. And that, you know, and even in the 12th step, it talks about sometime, you know, carrying a message is practicing and letting the addict see you, not trying to make somebody do something that they're not ready for. You know, like even the addict who's out there and you want to save them, you can't save them until they're ready. So you can't be doing more work than the other person, even in the house. But when you can own up to the part you play in it, and they could just see that. And for my children, that made it better. Because at first I was like, you guys don't clean up, you're not going to school, blah, blah, blah. You don't listen, blah, blah, blah. Instead of saying it like that, I started saying, you know, I know I haven't been here. I know I ran away into the fellowship after I was using. And I really want to make it up, because I don't like to say the word sorry. I really want to make it up to you guys. Tell me what I can do. And when they started telling me what I can do, I started doing those things. And then I asked them, can I tell you what I would like, just one thing I would like for you to do? And I started off like that, you know. And then we started, you know, giving and taking. And you know what? They are right. Only one of them have a drug problem right now. Only one of them have a drug problem right now. And right now she's in jail. And, you know, she wrote me the other day. And I duck her. I'm going to be honest with you. I duck her. I wrote her back, but it's like, so I don't want to go so deep inside, because I kind of know she's not ready. And so I don't want her to, I can take but so much seeing my daughter hurt herself, you know. So she's 26 years old. She burnt her house down, you know what I'm saying? I mean, she's like, she burnt her house down because she was mad because her husband didn't give her some coke. So, you know, she's in the beginning stages, and maybe she's not, but I'm too afraid to even face it, you know. But I pray a lot, because it's definitely out of my hands. It's in God's hands, and when she's ready, I'll definitely be there for her. But I know if I try to get into it with her now, I'm not going to be no good to her. And so I have this other lady who brings, because she's right in, they call it TGK in Miami. And this girl who brings the meeting in, H&I commitment again. I love H&I. H&I is the best, I'm telling you. She brings the meeting in, and she's, and I said, maybe my daughter asked you to be a sponsor. You know, just, you know, give her a word of encouragement, blah, blah, blah. And I try to ask other addicts to reach her, because, you know, she still have a lot of unresolved issues with me as well, you know. And so, you know, I just, what I try to do on a daily basis, I try to stay connected. I try to stay connected. As far as my service commitments in NA now, like I was telling you, I was on the Dagna chair, and that's our first two conventions in Miami. In North Dade, I was the chair, and I was the chair of H&I. I was on this board and that board and this and that. We were standing on tables, arguing and carrying on, and this committee and that committee. And now I'm just my home group's treasurer, because I didn't want to not do anything. Because at first I was going, I'm not doing anything, you know, fuck this kind of thing. And now I'm just like, I want to stay connected, so I'm going to do something, you know. I'm going to do something. Of course, I still attend meetings. I try to practice these principles in all my affairs. Even at work, you know, I don't know how God has a sense of humor, because I do service work on my job. Not just at home on my job, you know. I actually became a program administrator. I was doing counseling without a degree for many years, you know, going to school, blah, 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 blah. And then I came out of the field when I got my master's with substance abuse and went working with children, because I was in foster care too, so I wanted to go in the child welfare system. And that was more stressful. So I went back into substance abuse, and I get the opportunity to work with other addicts, but not as a counselor, as an administrator, you know. And I go to a lot of board meetings and stuff like that. But guess what? I work with the staff. And sometimes the staff, you ever been to treatment center? They need a meeting. But you know, and guess what? I practice the principles at work. And not all the time. Most of the time I can kind of deal better at work than any place else. Because I put on that, the administrative face, you know. Hi, everybody, you know. But, you know, like I said, we have meetings. I make sure I do the right thing on a daily basis. That's really what service is. I don't take power and just run with it. And I didn't know that I didn't know that I wouldn't do that until it actually I actually got the job like 3 years ago. You know, I actually practice the principles on my job. You know, and I do, and I try to do the right thing on a regular basis. This week, these last 2 days been a little difficult for me, you know, with my friend. I try to be a good friend sometime, and sometime, and I guess you can say that's at home, because when you got good friends in the fellowship, sometimes we are the hardest people to deal with. I'm telling you, man. We are. I mean, I'm saying we, me. Sometimes, you know, I just don't have the tolerance to deal with somebody else's shit, you know. And then I got to look inside and find out what's really going on with me, you know. And the service would be to practice the principle so the other person could be the fucking asshole, not me, you know. And so, you know, I'm going to attempt to do that. I'm going to attempt to, you know, because this weekend just really started. I just got here about 2 or 3 hours ago. So I can still, I got a chance to really actually start working, you know, principles right about now, because just 2 hours ago, I was a raging lunatic at the desk downstairs, the programming desk, screaming like I was out of my mind. Yes, me. Yeah, welcome, right? Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. I just want to let you know that from an addict who, you know, the night I surrendered, I didn't want to live no more. I didn't want to live. I had nothing. And you know what? What is a bottom anyway? You know, a bottom, some people say, is when you lost everything, you're eating out of a garbage can or you're tricking. No. A bottom to me is just when you just cannot live like that anymore. You know, like, I just wanted to die. I had nothing left. Nothing. And this program... And I swear to God, if we all in here can sit in here for the time that we sit in here, we definitely are blessed. I'm serious, because I couldn't sit down for 1 minute. If you didn't tell me you was giving me one, I couldn't hear you. I couldn't see you. And that I can be in a convention and, you know, and be able to talk about my shit and talk about the service I'm doing at home. And even though it wasn't like this wonderful story about the white picket fence kind of shit, you know what I'm saying? It's real, because I'm clean. And my kids, you know, I have a home and I have children and I'm a grandmother and stuff, you know what I'm saying? And I'm employable and I took the plane here. Shit, I couldn't even make it. You know what? I had a radius, because I ran to Miami, a radius where I was going to go, where I was going to trick, what I was going to do. That's the only plan I had, you know, and this program... And you people, us, man, we saved each other's lives. You know? I remember, you know, raped, beat up, all the shit that happened to me. Sometimes I still get flashbacks. And then I want to complain, you know what I'm saying? I'm arguing with her. All I got to do is just go back 1 second and remember the shit I did out there. And so if I can help anybody today... And I could just tell you that this program works. If you don't really know about this program, if you don't know what this program can do for you, just stay another day, please. Because this is the best thing that ever happened to me. And I would not trade this for anything. Anything. And, you know, and that service right there. You know, because somebody, you know, when I was chasing that shit, I mean, they was talking about the crucial, when you're going to get it, and, you know, it was the best, the first one was the, you know, whatever you thought, the one I thought it was. Never will get it, never had it, and never will get it out there. You know, and you know what, the last week I was out there, I kept visualizing them throwing my ass in a potty field. I don't know what they call it out here. You know, I was just a skinny crackhead, okay? And I kept visualizing. I don't get visions, and I'm not a religious lunatic or nothing like that. But I was seriously seeing them throw my ass in a potty field. You know, just like this is another fucking crackhead bitch, and just throw me in the potty field kind of thing with a bunch of other dead bodies. And I kept visualizing that. And I just couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't do it. And it's like, you know, a trick brought me to detox kind of thing, you know? A trick. I can't tell you how he looked, whether it was a man or woman, what the hell, what. I can't even tell you. I don't even remember. I just knew it was somebody, and it was 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night. That's all I can tell you. From 91 to now, and some people be comparing this, this is the service here, comparing this to their addiction, this recovery to their addiction. I feel like I was using, no, the fuck you didn't, because if you did, go take another hit then, or whatever the drug of choice was, because it is nothing. This is the best thing, boy. This is the crucial. And I just like to say, this is my first time here in Ocean City, and I'm grateful that they asked me to share, even though I was telling you the truth about what I felt earlier, because the disease was just playing with me, you know. And you know what? It manifests itself in all areas. And what you got to do is get in touch with that. And I ain't never seen a perfect addict. I know I ain't never going to be perfect, but I always strive to be better on a regular, you know. Because you know what? I still don't know the best thing that God wants for me yet. He just keeps you know what? And you know the other thing is, we didn't get saved for us. We didn't come in here. What I mean by saved, we didn't get clean for us alone. That's what service is about. He uses us to help other people. You wonder why you in here and some people just relapse? They're dead or they're this and they that. Do you wonder why? Do you ever think about it? That you could sit here for a goddamn minute? You were selected. I really believe this, and I don't know if you guys believe this or not, but this is what helped me stay clean. I'm just giving you my experience, strength, and hope. I was selected to help other people, my family members at home, people around me, and I still don't know how else I'm going to be used. I don't know how my power got next. I had no idea I'd be running a treatment. Please, a dope fiend like me for Catholic Charities. Come on now. I would never think that God would put me there. You know, I thought I was gonna be running a fast food restaurant for real, because I knew how to run shit. Now I know I'm gonna be running something. Because I got some control issues like a mother, boy. But I didn't think it was going to be like that, you know what I'm saying? And he still got more, you know? I still don't have a clue, you know? And just the way I was behaving today lets me know that I have to really stay grounded. And I just got to keep coming. And, you know, I'm going to do something for a new, do some stuff for a newcomer to get out of myself. Because that self-centeredness is the core of our disease. And if you ain't doing service, you ain't working on recovery. Forget it. Because you can't keep it unless you give it away. Thank you for letting me share. Yeah. I hope I went long enough. High five. No, you're fine.
Thank you, Janet. And our next speaker from the Rock Creek area is Paul.
I'm an addict named Paul.
Hey, Paul.
I'm real grateful to be clean today. And I try to always say that when I share. And the reason why I always try to say that when I share is because sometimes I forget why I'm here. You know, that I'm an addict and that I'm a guy who suffers from the disease of addiction, who can't live with or without drugs. And so I need a lot more than just abstinence to get better. And they keep getting better. And I try to do that on a daily basis. You know, this topic, service work is for at home, too, is actually something I do practice. I remember when I got here in 1989, wasn't planning on staying. I was going to beat a charge and, you know, let them know it was just a big mistake. Didn't happen, but I found something here, and I started, like, attending meetings regularly. And I don't know that I wanted anything that you guys had, but I knew that I didn't want to be bored to tears while I was here. And so I started paying attention. And so I listened at meetings real strong, and I heard somebody speak that was interesting, he was funny, and he had 10 years clean, and that sounded real good to me, because I figured that'd be very impressive, you know, if I tell my PO that my sponsor has 10 years clean. At that time, it was a hell of a lot of time. Okay, now 10 years, a lot of people think 10 years isn't all that much, or at least it's very common. That was not common when I got here. And so I asked this guy to sponsor me. And I remember he started teaching me the day I met him, because I didn't ask him to sponsor me. What I did is I said, I need a sponsor. You know, and I hemmed and hawed around that for a while, and finally he just looked me straight in the eye and he said, if you want somebody to sponsor you, you have to ask them. See, because that wasn't something I knew how to do when I was out there using. You know, you made suggestions or, you know, hinted or beat around the bush a whole lot and hopefully things fell your way. You know, you didn't ask people straight out like that. Not because I was ashamed to ask anybody. It just wasn't something you did. You shouldn't have to do that, you know. But he taught me if I need something, I need to ask for it, you know. And anyway, I got this guy to be my sponsor. He said he would, and he told me some real simple shit to do. He told me to call him every day, don't use, read some literature, get to a meeting, and pray. And he said, when you call, you don't have to know nothing. Just call. You know, I did not know this man was doing service. I had no clue. I don't know why he would want me to call. Didn't know then. But he carried out his end of the bargain. I didn't have to know anything. I didn't. You know, but I did make the call because he made it real simple on me. I made the call. And he would fill in the gaps and he would, you know, extend the conversation. He asked me how I was doing. Did I use today? Did I read from some literature today? Did I pray today? Am I going to a meeting today? If answer any of those things was no, he would set me on track, you know. Kept it real simple for an addict like me with brain damage, you know what I mean? And I remember the reason I brought up this guy that I got for a sponsor is because, you know, his wife threw a party because this girl was interested in me, so they threw a party at their house, and this girl took me to this party, and I didn't know that she had any designs on me or anything else like this, because I... To me, she was like Miss N.A.
Okay, that's funny.
Yeah, you know, and I believe she was just helping the newcomer, okay? And anyway, we ended up getting married 7 months to the day after that, you know. To the, 7 months to the day from when I got out of prison, actually, and because I had a year clean when I came back. You know, I'd gotten clean in 89. You know, I did about 10 months. After 44 days, I did 10 months, and I came back out, and I came to my regular meetings, Rock Creek area, you know, and I met this girl, and we hooked up. But I brought her coffee once I, you know, moved in. That's how you know when an addict is dating, they move in. And, you know, I brought her coffee in the morning to say, can you bring me coffee? Because she's not a morning person. I am. I mean, I get up, and I'm just happy. I really am. And, so I brought her coffee, and I told him that, you know, my sponsor, and he says, oh, that shit'll stop, you know, and, well, we're together still, happily married, and I still bring her coffee every morning, okay?
Fine.
That's service, but I don't do it for her, I do it for me, because I'm a self-centered addict that needs to get out of myself in order to get better, you know? And so those are the sorts of things that I learned early on, because somebody told me when I first came here, I had a couple weeks clean, and I sort of felt like, gee, I might want to, you know, feel a little bit more a part of, and I didn't know what to do because I had like 2 weeks clean and I was clueless. And he said, put some chairs away. Show up early next week. Put out some chairs and put out some ashtrays. Clean up some ashtrays. And I started doing those things, and I became to be a part of, you know. And and so I seized right on it because I felt better. I felt better. I felt a part of, you know, when I got locked up, I, you know, turned out there was a meeting. There was an H&I meeting coming into Lorton, Virginia. I was down at Occoquan. And I was so excited. I ran up to the meeting, and so I sat up front. They saw me sitting up front and all excited about the meeting, so they made me a part of the meeting. They made me sit up front every week. And, and just for me getting a little bit of, trying to be involved, I got some benefits. All of a sudden, people thought I knew something. I didn't know anything, but they thought I knew something. They act like I knew something. And so I was surrounded by the few people that were interested in recovery were flocking to me because I was apparently part of the in crowd, the people who wanted recovery and had a little bit. Now, I had, you know, 2 months clean. I really didn't think I had anything, but people thought I did or acted like I did because I was acting like I'm a part of and caring, you know, helping the group, you know, helping whoever I can help. You know, and there was one guy in there that would carry a meeting in there and do an H&I that I met on the street, and I was so grateful. I was so grateful to see somebody, you know, because otherwise I would have felt probably a little bit adrift, but, you know, NA saved my life, you know, but because I got involved there, it really insulated me from a lot of the carrying on that goes on in you know, in lockup, you know, and it saved me, you know, it really did. And being focused on Narcotics Anonymous and focused on service gave me a purpose, you know, kept me out of a whole lot of trouble, you know. But, you know, this topic talks about doing service work at home, you know, and I do that in all my affairs, you know, because I'm a homeowner, you know, I'm part of a neighborhood association, I own my own business, you know, I have neighbors, I have, you know, friends, whatever, and I do whatever I can do to help anybody. I mean, I do whatever I can do to help my wife, you know, I do work around the house. I've got no problem doing laundry. I got no problem putting away dishes. I got no problem doing any sort of service work. If it needs doing, you don't have to nag me to do nothing, you know. Because I want a nice house, and I want nice things, and I want, you know, I mean, I want things to be good around me, you know. I want the people that are around me and in my life to, you know, have a good life, and I want those people to, you know, feel like they're in a great place, a great environment, you know. I take care of my dogs, you know. I mean, you know, it sounds stupid, but let me tell you. I mean, it's a lot of work taking care of dogs, but you know what? When I come home after a hard day, can't anybody give me the sort of love and affection unconditionally, you know, that a dog can? I mean, that, and believe me, there are some days when, phew, I need all I can get, you know what I mean? When I come home after a hard day and I'm stressed and I, you know, some days I've been acting like a real asshole and maybe more than others, you know what I mean? Being responsible sometimes is a heavy burden for me, you know what I mean? Because I feel like I'm the only one that's responsible, you know? But doing service helps me in those ways, you know? And I go out of my house, you know, and my neighbors need help and they need suggestions. I know a lot of stuff about working, you know, on houses. I know a lot of stuff about working on yards. And I go out and I freely share that stuff. And part of it is selfish. I want them to have nice yards, so I come home and I come home in a nice neighborhood. But I also, you know, happy to give anybody any sort of benefit of my experience and how to do any sort of a project around the house, because I have all that stuff. I have all that knowledge. You know, and people freely share stuff with me all the time. And, you know, sometimes I shoplift it. Sometimes I just sit there and watch, and they're not necessarily trying to share it with me. I'm just sitting there watching and learning, you know, because I was taught that's what I'm supposed to do here is watch people. Things that I want that will work in my life, they'll help me in my life, those are there. You know, those are there for me for the taking, you know, to help me in my life and to help me to get better. You know, and so I do those sorts of things. I get involved in my neighborhood association, you know, our civic association. I get involved in free events, you know, and doing community service. You know, go do a yard cleanup, not a yard cleanup, you know, a park cleanup and things like that, you know, and put on little block parties and all that stuff. And, you know, all that stuff is real hokey. But it the same principle that made me a part of NA and made people look up to me and think I knew something, I walk around the neighborhood, people look at me like I'm a civic leader. You know, I'm a two-time felon, you know. They don't know I was, you know, locked up for, you know, selling cocaine out of the liquor store and all that other shit. And, I mean, and I don't know how much they would even necessarily care because they look at me and they see how I carry my life today. Mm-hmm. How do I practice principles in my life today? I'm a guy who takes care of his yard and freely helps anybody who wants help. You know, that's what they look at, you know. When they want some help, they want somebody to, you know, walk their cat or something like that because they're going away and they give me the keys to their house. You know, I got my first robbery at 15, my first robbery charge at 15, you know. Hey, you know, you know, because that's who I am, you know. Some guy said it was a good idea and we'd get enough for a steak. We'd get a quarter pound back then, $45 to get you a quarter pound of pot, just to date myself. We got our $45, but we got locked up, you know. But, you know, they don't know those things, and they don't look at me that way because that's not how I live today, you know. I just go out of my way as best I can to just look around. And again, I don't do this so that they'll think of me as this great person. I do this because when I stop doing those sorts of things, I start thinking that somebody owes me something. And whatever I'm willing to work for, I'm going to be able to get. I believe that. Mm-hmm. I was taught that when I got here, that as long as I'm willing to put forth the effort, to put in the footwork, I can have anything I want, mm-hmm. you know. But I have to really be willing. I mean, I have to, you know, I'm the sort of guy that, left to his own devices, would talk his way out of all the good things in his own life. You know, I mean, that's what I truly believe. I don't believe I'm going to walk out of here one day and use. I believe that I'm going to stop practicing some of those principles that I was taught here, that I'll stop being willing, I'll stop being honest, you know, I'll start trying to screw around on somebody's money, you know, as a contractor and end up losing my license, or, you know, cutting short on the workman's compensation because I'm going to cut a few corners and save a few dollars, you know, and I'll end up, you know, being brought up on some sort of charges some other way, you know. Or I'll start thinking the grass is greener on the other side because, you know, as I age, you know, we age. And I went through a midlife crisis where everybody looked good, you know. And I didn't used to believe in all that sort of stuff when I was a younger man, you know. When a certain time in my life, I'm 48 coming up on 49. Wow. When I hit around 41, let me tell you, all of a sudden, boom, a switch went off my head. And it's like, you know, trying to keep eyeballs front and center was very difficult. You know, and that's real. You know, and I didn't know that, and I didn't believe that. I judged a lot of people who had wandering eyes and wandering lots of other stuff too. You know, but you know, so it came as a complete shock to me, and you know, to find out that a lot of that shit is real. You know, and I'm constantly amazed at how little I know when I hear people talk, and I've already been judging, because I'm a big judger. You know, I mean, it's not that I want to judge. I judge. That's just reality. You know, I judge people. You know, I hear what they're doing, and I think they're not doing it right. You know, and I hear them share something that makes me realize that I need to show some compassion, because they may not be working with the same tools I'm working with. You know, because this, you know, it happens all the time. It happened again at dinner last night when I heard somebody talking to somebody else. You know, and I thought, they just, you know, because some people go in and out. I was blessed to come here, and the first NA meeting I came to, I've been clean ever since, you know. And the only reason I even knew that date, because I was finally surrendered after about, I don't know how many days of being in this outpatient joint still working at the liquor store where I'd sold drugs out of, and wasn't getting clean. Of course, I wasn't going to meetings or anything else like that, but I'd walk out the liquor store every day, you know, and I'd be fine all day, wouldn't cop anything and wouldn't do anything. And 9 o'clock rolls around, and I'm walking out the door, and I just got to snatch me something, you know, just something to take the edge off. And I couldn't get that day clean, you know, and I finally asked my outpatient place to put me on Anabuse, you know, and I did. And, you know, it helped to take that impulse off, because I am an obsessive addict. I'm totally self-centered, you know, and I need something to take me out of myself. And that's what service work does. It takes me out of my natural self-centered way of thinking, you know, because service, I was taught, was doing the right thing for the right reason. And the right reason for me, there are many right reasons. Some of it is to allow me to get involved, to feel a part of, but it's also to help me feel better. It's not always for the other person. Most of the time it's not for the other person. Most of the time it's for me. And how I carry myself is the biggest service I can do. Sometimes I believe, you know, there's a group that I attend. The first meeting I ever attended is on Wednesday night, and I still attend that meeting. Now I'm their GSR, which was the first group service commitment I ever had, but that was 17 years ago at that group. Now I'm its GSR once again. I've held many positions over the years in between, you know. But for many years, I didn't have a group service commitment at that group, a recognized group service commitment. I was there every week, and I sat in the same chair, you know, and I still do. And I believe that's a service. because I have people that come and attend that meeting sometimes, and they'll go out and use, and they'll come back 10 years later, and they'll look over, and they'll see me sitting in that chair, and they'll say, NA works. See? You know, so even if I don't have a group service commitment, I believe that's a position that I hold, is to being a trusted servant just by showing up each and every week. And I do, each and every week. You know, unless I'm out of town, I'm there, and I'm only out of town on a Wednesday, maybe three times a year, you know, when I'm on vacation, doing things that I'm supposed to do for myself. Because doing service doesn't mean that I can't ever have time for myself, and that's very important. I need to remember that, because one of the major defects, or at least where all my defects to me seemed to flow from, I was shown when I did a fifth step with my second sponsor, was from unworthiness. And so putting aside time for myself is something that I must do in order to be able to carry the message to others. In order to do service at home, I have to be in a place where I'm spiritually grounded. You know, I have to have some downtime for myself. I have to be able to sit and read the newspaper on Saturday morning while I drink my coffee, you know, relax and discharge, you know what I mean? You know, it's the same stuff we were told when we got here, that it's a selfish program, but it's not selfish. That's not the reason we do it. We have to take care of ourselves in order to be able to help others. You know, if you want to help somebody else, you're not going to do it by saving them. You're going to do it by showing them that this program can work, that if and when you're willing to do the footwork necessary, you can get all the benefits we have here. You know, and that's what I was taught. It's like they tell us on the airplane, you know, if you have somebody that needs some help, you know, when those little bags drop down, how you help them is help yourself first, because then you're able to carry that, see. You know, and that's what they told me when I got here. Those sorts of things, and I didn't quite understand it then. It took a long time for a lot of that stuff to sink in, you know. You know, I still attend my home group regularly. It's Friday night. It's at 10 o'clock. It's going to meet tonight, and a couple people have, you know, are opening up the meeting. There's only a couple people going to be there. I've certainly remember times when I've had to go open up a meeting. You know, when there's a marathon or something else like going on. And I went, opened up the meeting, made the coffee, put out the literature, you know, and sat there for 20-some minutes, and then somebody showed up, one person, you know, a newcomer, not even a day clean, you know, and shared my story for 15 minutes, let them share for 10 minutes, and I said, let's go to the marathon meeting. That's what we did. You know, I mean, I'm supposed to just show up. That's my job, doing service, you know. I'm supposed to show up. I'm supposed to do the right thing. And, you know, I mean, I'm not sure what else I can say about service. I've held about every position that have come in front of me, you know, GSR, ASR, chairperson of my area, chairperson of my regional convention, you know, a whole bunch of other things in between, you know, phone line, all sorts of things. I was the, you know, president and vice president of the board of directors of this convention. I gave this convention 5 years of my life, and it's in loving service, you know, because I love this place. You know, I love coming here. I love seeing a whole lot of people that I haven't seen in a long time. I came here today, and I saw some guys that, you know, they just moved back to the East Coast, and I haven't seen them, you know, 4 or 5 years. You know, it's the sort of thing where we gather to share our, you know, our joy and also to reconnect with people and, you know, and it's great, you know, and I'm less involved that way, but I think there's a lot of ways I'm supposed to do service, you know, sometimes just being asked to speak, you know, it's not a lower form of service, it's what we do, we're supposed to carry the message, you know, what do we got, you know, and me and Janet talked a little bit before the meeting, and I was saying, you know, we're just supposed to share what we got, you know, because there was a guy that spoke earlier today, his name was John from New Jersey, and he was talking about we carry the message. You know, and he said he was only supposed to carry his part, what he had, you know, because it's only part of a big picture. It's my belief that every meeting that I come to is not for me, and every meeting I come to when I share is not for every single person in the room, but there's probably somebody out there that's supposed to be hearing what I got to talk about, you know, what my experience is. I mean, that's why we do this. That's why we keep doing this. That's why I keep doing it, because I was told this is the way this works. You know, we just come here, and I share honestly. And let the chips fall where they may, because it's not up to me to save anybody. It's up to somebody with a whole lot more power than I am. I have, you know, because I don't have a whole lot of power. All I have really is my experience and what I was taught here, and I was taught a whole lot of principles, you know, to be selfless, you know, and that's what the 12th step is about. is being selfless. I'm supposed to be visible, you know. I'm supposed to continue to attend meetings and talk at meetings and be involved in committees and subcommittees, and I help out at the Area Service Committee as a literature person. I was their chairperson for a while, and now I'm the literature person as a helper, you know, training somebody. When I asked one of my sponsees, I said, wouldn't you like a position at the Area Service? And he was actually grateful now, I think, because, you know, and he brought in a whole bunch of new people, and that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to say, you know what, this position helped me a whole lot, and you could probably get a whole lot out of it. Because he wasn't involved in that way, and he didn't think he had the time. I said, it's one day a month, you know. And that's what we do here, you know, just, you know, try to carry on what it is that we were taught, that I was taught, you know, and just carry that message, you know. I believe in service. I believe that I'm supposed to do it in all my affairs. I have the hardest time practicing some of those principles when I'm in charge on my job site. And that's the area I struggle the most in. You know, be a compassionate boss, you know, not blowing my top, you know, those sorts of things. And I do pretty good, probably 95% of the time. And in fact, the people that work for me, you know, they even congratulate me when I go through a good 2-week stretch where I don't yell, you know. And you know, that's okay. I am who I am, and I do what I can. You know, and that's all I can do is just focus on myself and recognize that I'm not perfect. I'll never be perfect. But fortunately, this is not a program of perfection. It's a program of progress, you know, and so if I just keep focusing on myself and stay in track on what it is I'm supposed to be doing and check myself every so often, you know, and other people will check me. Believe me, if you have a strong network around you, and I do, they will check me if I'm out of line. You know, they will check me if I'm off the beam. You know, I'm married to a person that will absolutely check me if I'm off the beam, you know, in a heartbeat. you know, and I'm grateful for that. And, you know, and there are some people who look at me in my area and probably think, God, I really want to be like him, you know, and dedicated and all this stuff. And there's probably some other people who think, what a chump. And that doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is what I feel about myself, and because I have a belief system about how I want to be, and I do that to the best of my ability to, you know, just practice what it is I believe, you know. And it's not really important to me if some of those people think that, you know, gee, why don't you man up, you know, all that serving your wife business and all. You know what? I've been happily married for a long time, and they're not, you know. I mean, that's the bottom line, you know. I do what I do, and I get what I get, and I'm happy with my results, and that's why I do it, you know. I'm not sure how much more I can share. I hope I've come close, you know, and so I just want to tell you all that I'm really, really grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, this meeting's supposed to go for 30 more minutes, and so now we have, we're supposed to have people come up and speak, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to open the meeting up now. If anybody wants to share, please come up and speak at the microphone, and I guess try and keep your sharing around 5 minutes so everybody who wants to speak can get a chance to share. Does anybody want to come up and Oh, go ahead.
I surrendered to the Narcotics Anonymous program. I'm a recovered addict. My name is Bronco.
Hi, Bronco.
Hello, family, boy. I want to thank y'all both for sharing. Thank you for being the secretary. You know, you hitting home, both of y'all. And I've been in service ever since day one. I, too, never relapsed. I came in Narcotics Anonymous from off a park bench, by way of TWA, a third whooped ass. And I came in on December 17th, 1993, and I gave up, showed up, set up, I shut up, I listened up, I got an NA sponsor to go inside to help me clean up. Embarking on a 12-step journey, I was introduced to God, staying connected, be protected. My God helped me begin to grow up, but keep checking in so I won't check out. He helped me stop effing up. And that's my process. I'm 63 years of age. I came in Narcotics Anonymous at the age of 50. And like, I can look back, but I ain't got to go back. And I got in service in my first NA meeting because I saw a fine girl picking up cups. And I asked her, what is she doing? She said, I'm picking up these cups. I said, you ain't got to do that. I'll do this. So I picked up the cups, and I didn't know what to do with them. So she looked back there, and I said, I know she liked me. She came back there. Now I'm from off of Park Pinch. I know I was stinking because I was hugging y'all, and y'all smelled like perfume, cologne, and oil. But my head told me she liked me. And when she came back, she said, what's wrong? I said, I don't know what to do with these. She took me out the door, lift up this trash can lid, told me to throw them in, put the lid back on, and said, come on with me. I said, I knew it. And I said, I said, where we going? She said, we're going back in the meeting. I said, you make memes all the time? She said, every day. I said, well, I am too. Y'all told me whatever keeps me coming, let it keep me coming. So I've been coming ever since. And I held a lot of positions. In Philadelphia, where I'm from, we have an event sheet. And I done been to Steward, I've been to GSR, I've been to RCM, I've been the meeting list, and that was the second most important book in Narcotics Anonymous. I was a trusted servant, secretary, co-chair, the chair for the inner city area. They sent me to region, the Greater Philadelphia region. I was a trusted servant, co-chair, secretary, the regional chairperson. And I did that for 7 years of recovery. And I didn't believe in God in my first 7 years of recovery. But somewhere on this journey, I started coming to believe in God. And what I'm in touch with, the service structure, all I was doing. And the day I started really coming to believe in God, I was chairing the home group I'm a member of, the Light of Exposure, and we have an 18-day marathon, July 1st to July 18th, 365 hours, around the clock. And I was sitting in the meeting, and somebody said, and I was an arsonist before getting into Narcotics Anonymous. And I was sitting in the meeting, and I kept smelling smoke. I said, I wish these people put these cigarettes out. And somebody came in the meeting. The old house next door is on fire. So I jumped up and went to run. They say, look at the arsonist running. But I ran in the back. Without my permission, I ran in the back, grabbed this big pot, put it in the sink, start filling up with water. I ran outside, I looked at the ground, I looked at the place, I saw some smothering over there. I ran back in, got the water, and everybody told my Bronco, go inside the building and throw it in the floor, throw it in there. I don't know if that building had floors, so I didn't go in the building. I stood on concrete, threw the water over there, went and got some more, and when the fire department came, they said, whoever threw the water on that fire did a good job. They say, everybody say, look at you, used to be an arsonist. Instead of starting fires, you put fires out. All right, then. Service. I didn't want to be a part of that. We have an event sheet. And it says, if you have an event to be posted on a home group marathon anniversary or something, if you don't know how to go on the website, contact Bronco, a girl named Regina, a guy named Drew, or a guy named Dennis, and we'll put it on the website for you. From other areas got information, we'll put it and post it. Well, everybody called me, and I said, yeah, you got some information? They say, no, I want to know what's happening. I said, where did you get my number from? They say, off the event sheet. I say, well, read what it says. If you have something to be posted, contact me. It don't say contact me to ask me what's happening, because you're running your mouth in meetings, you're not listening to the announcements, and then you want to reap the rewards without doing the labor. But what an addict do this in service. Give them the information anyway. And by doing it at home, by doing all this here, in Philly we just had bad snow. And I moved up in my neighborhood, and the neighbors talking about the city won't come and clean the snow off the pavement. Good Sham Bronco, good thinking recovery. I say, why don't we all get together with our shovels, and we'll clean the first car, let them move out, clean the next car. I say, I don't own the car now, so y'all don't have to do this, because I won't. I'll go back in my house and clean my pavement. Good idea. We cleaned the cars. The cars went around the block and the clean shovel at the corner by our park, our driveway. We got big piles of snow, and we look back. And, you know, it's ironic when I'm a junior senior citizen. I'm 63. When the young bucks who were doing the drug dealing outside look and saw all us elderly and junior senior citizens out there, they offered to lend a hand. And they said, I don't know what you do, man, but you look like you're trying to break me from selling stuff out there on these corners. But you know what? I'm going to help you anyway. And it seemed like I brought the neighbors together. So the guys, I told them, y'all might leave in our corner, but you're going to somebody else's corner. And I don't think it's right. But I don't think y'all should point a gun at me neither. I say, so what I'm going to do, I won't call a cop on you as long as y'all don't disturb our neighborhood. And he was just saying about having a cookout. Soon we had a nice day this year. The drug dealers brought a whole lot of food. They asked us to just buy the charcoal and bring our fireplaces out. And we cooked. And I watched the little Joe and the children. And all they say, Mr. Bronco go to a place where they come back laughing. I want to go to that place. And that's what I think. I want that service at home. I give back the greatest because I come to conventions and I work on a committee where we do the taping, and that's giving back. And I am very self-centered, but y'all told me if I bring my self-centered ass, you bring your self-centered ass, we'll help each other with our self-centeredness. And that's what I do on a daily basis. I love y'all all, and I don't need y'all damn permission. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Sharon.
I know there's a crazy fool there. And I know that crazy fool there, too. My name is Peter, and I am an addict.
Hi, Peter.
You know, I've been doing service since after 91. I did service in the Psychiatric Institute of Washington doing coffee maker. My selfishness, I didn't want to do it until these guys that loving and caring said, you got to do this. And I, you know, I had a lot of anger in me and I couldn't, and one day I said, I had it, I stopped doing it. And when I got some clean time on my belt, they got me to do key tags and putting out literature and setting up the chairs. And today, when there's nobody is going to show up and do this stuff, I will do it. I will set up chairs or give up, put out the literature or give out key tags, make coffee, or there's nobody to there to lead a meeting, I will just put myself up in that chair and lead it. I've been doing this almost a year and a half ago, almost had 14 years, and it didn't happen. Now I'm coming up on 2 years. I know these two characters, and, you know, I used to party with this guy a long time ago. And all my friends, one day I walked into in this meeting called Beginning Miracles on Connecticut Avenue in Chevy Chase. They all were sitting in that room. All my friends that I used with, they were all sitting in that room. And they carried that message to me and said, it's okay, keep coming back, my friend. Don't give up. I haven't I'm still not giving up because, you know, I'll say this and I'll shut up, is I came drunk at the Psychiatric Institute and I still kept coming back and I was still doing. After when I came out of Avery Road, that literature at that table was still there and those key tags were still there for me. And I still kept on doing it. Because, you know, that's what they showed me when I walked into these rooms. They said, here, Peter, this is what you can do. You know, I walk in my own my mother's neighborhood today. I used to walk in my neighborhood, in that neighborhood a long time ago, and they used to run away from me. Today, they like me walking in my neighborhood, my mother's neighborhood. They like me walking in Bethesda. I'm a recovering addict. I don't act crazy and act like a nut. I act like a decent human being. These guys, I sit next to this guy every Wednesday night. Every single night. I sit every Wednesday night and next to him. And we're friends. And this is my friend too. And that's a miracle. Fucking miracle. We couldn't even sit. Didn't know how to act like decent men. We act like animals. Now we're like, we sit next to each other. We have a smile on our face. We get to talk to each other and laugh. That's a fucking miracle. That's all I have to share tonight.
Thanks for sharing. Anybody else? We have a few more minutes. Anybody want to share?
I'm an act named Keegan.
Hey, Keegan.
And I'm grateful to be here. Grateful for those who shared. And I have this more in my mouth. I wasn't sure if I was going to, like, run out after the speakers were done or sit around and see if I could get up here and share for a minute. I was naturally drawn to this meeting as soon as I got here. I'd been in the car arguing with my girlfriend for 4 hours on the way down here. Left her in the hotel room crying and ran here from the hotel. Just like trying to get a message, be in an atmosphere of recovery and get my mind right. When you were sharing, it was really, I could identify with a lot. Unfortunately, the stuff that I could identify with was like being really judgmental and, being hard on others. And the part that I couldn't identify with, but the part that kind of made my, heart go pitter-patter, man, was the part about like just interested in being good to others, just like wanting to help out all the time. And, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, I wonder if some people just come like that and some don't. And maybe I'm just, like, one of the people who doesn't come like that. And maybe he is. Maybe he just came out that way with, like, a loving heart. And maybe I didn't. Now, look, I mean, I've been here for a minute. I've worked some steps. I've changed dramatically. I mean, dramatically. The steps will save your life. Absolutely. But I'm in a crazy relationship and on a sixth step, so everything right now is like completely fucking out of control.
Welcome.
And I play a huge part in it, but I tell you what, I pretty regularly find myself in the position you know, I'm not on, like I said, I'm on a sixth step, but I remember reading in the eighth step that thing it says about, you know, trying to understand instead of being understood. And that, to me, is like calculus, you know what I mean? Like, just something that I cannot even fathom. Like, I couldn't do it if you paid me right now. I don't think I could do that. It is just all about, like, don't you fucking realize what you are doing to me? Like, do you not see how you are inconsiderate and hurting my little precious feelings? And that's exactly what, I mean, I was like, I wouldn't talk to her. I was like, I'm not even gonna stay in the hotel room tonight. On some shit that, like, we left later than we said we were gonna leave. And that makes her this, like, inconsiderate monster instead of just, like, someone who made a fucking mistake and was running late. But don't you know that I set my time aside and I schedule shit so I'm there for you when you need me? And I don't be fucking coming to your shit 20 minutes late. Because I care about you and I'm invested in this relationship, so I show the fuck up on time. And you don't show me that same courtesy.
I know I'm in the right place.
And then you know what? Like, shocking as this is, right? Like, I've done this before, and I've lost relationships over this. And then I'm single, being like, what happened? You know what I mean? Like, and that's why as soon as I read this, man, you know, one of the other ones was like looking for love in the wrong places at a similar time, but I saw this one, man, and I know that service will change everything. And if my relationship at home is the one that needs changing, you know, then trying to figure out some practical application of service. And I did hear a lot of good stuff. I mean, I feel rejuvenated. I feel like I can be more loving when I, you know, see her now and try and attempt some reconciliation. Because it's just like my man said. I mean, truly, that's who I would like to be. I would like to be someone who wants good things around, you know, wants to have good things around me. I want to be someone who's happy. I want to be someone who tries to make other people happy. And I fail fucking miserably at that, but I still want to, so, you know, I still gotta keep trying. And that's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.